You're listening to the Mid-Career GPS Podcast, episode 99.
I think it's where a lot of people find themselves getting derailed in a way. They may not be consciously aware that they're getting derailed, but what tends to happen is you then are in a career that 6, 7, 8 years later, you finally hit that wall, whatever it is. And you finally start to understand for yourself that you're like, wait a minute, what the hell am I doing? Like, why am I here and how the hell did I get here?
Our mid-career journeys can take us to some interesting places. Whether you're an active job seeker, a high-performing leader, or someone who just isn't sure what is next for their career, the entire process can be a bit overwhelming. It's one of the reasons why I started this podcast. Today, you are going to meet Kevin Hunting, the founder of Leading Kinder and Two Steps Forward Coaching. He's a leadership coach who helps change makers maximize their impact by helping them lead kinder. In this episode, you'll learn how to manage your overwhelm in your job search and career, why job seekers need to be more aware of how they are marketing themselves, what it means to lead kinder, and what to do when you make a career move and follow someone you love. This is the Mid-Career GPS Podcast, and I'm your host, John Nerrell. I help mid-career professionals who are feeling undervalued and underutilized show up to find the job they love or love the job they have using my proven four-step formula. It's time to start building your mid-career GPS, so let's get started. Hello, my friends. Welcome back to the podcast. Before you meet my guest this week, I've got a special announcement. Next week is episode 100. I hope you'll come back with me next week to celebrate. But right now, I want to thank you for all of your support over the past year and a half to help get this podcast where it is today. We are still going strong, and there is a lot more I have planned, but I am honored you are along this journey with me. Now, if you want some additional help and support outside of this podcast, I want to invite you to join my private Facebook group called Your Mid-Career GPS, and certainly check out both of my books on Amazon, Show Up, 6 Strategies to Lead a More Energetic and Impactful Career, as well as Your Mid-Career GPS, 4 Steps to Figuring Out What's Next. But right now, I want you to meet Kevin Hunting. He and I met last year during a business mastermind, and we have stayed in touch ever since. I love how Kevin is so focused on his core message and principles to help leaders and those organizations. So I want you to meet him.
Hello, everybody. I'm Kevin Hunting. I am the founder of Kinder and Two Steps Forward Coaching. I am a leadership coach who is really passionate about helping professionals and mission-driven organizations unlock their potential so that they can lead with greater ease, confidence, and impact. Because don't we all want to have an impact? Of course we do.
We hear so much about wanting to make an impact, and Kevin is doing that. I respect and admire Kevin's work, and you'll learn a little bit later how he and I have traveled a similar career journey when it comes to a major life event. Now, you'll hear that this episode is slightly different. When I interviewed Kevin, there were parts of our conversation where things just kept going. And when I went to take this into post, I didn't want to edit a whole lot of it. So let me know if you like that or not. Kevin thought his career was going to take him down a different path. And even though things didn't work out for him the way he thought when he was younger, the lessons he learned were about accepting what you have and what you don't.
You know, I wanted to be a ballet dancer. I did enroll in ballet as a young child and really excelled at it. Actually, I did excel at it. And part of the reason I had to take ballet was because I was also a gymnast. And I did spend almost 16 years of my life training in gymnastics and tried out for the Junior Olympic national team.
Did you make the team?
I did not make the team. But I had a wonderful trip to Colorado Springs at the Olympic Training Center, and that was worth every you know, worth the experience in itself.
What's the biggest takeaway you have from trying out for the Junior Olympic team?
I think really my time, 16 years, which was a pretty long time, right, to commit to something, is just this idea of perseverance and commitment. And that if you believe in something and you are passionate about it, which I was passionate about gymnastics before I burned out, it is just that, you know, being committed to it and really focusing your time and effort into it is never going to be a bad thing. Like, it's always going to pay off for you.
What was your favorite event?
Oh my gosh, that's a great question. Well, first off, I'm tall for a gymnast. So I just want, I am 5'11", and most gymnasts, especially males, probably are more, you know, in the range of like 5'5", maybe 5'7", lower center of gravity. So I like my favorite event was high bar, but as you can imagine, 5'11", I just had this long, lanky body that would swing around that single bar. But I loved it. I don't know if it was just that kind of the freedom that you had when you were on the high bar, but I definitely struggled, I would say, with rings and parallel bars. Those were two very challenging apparatuses to try to excel at, just because my body, you know, the length of my body.
Isn't that a great lesson to learn early on, that we just have to accept what we're given? Right? You can't be shorter. You can't be taller. You just are. That's where you're at, right? You hit a point where you're 5'11", and you're like, all right, I got to work with this.
I love where you're going with that, because you're right. It's rather than try to fight it, how can you tap into it, right? How can you play off of your strengths? Which to me, it is, as much as it was a challenge being a taller gymnast, it really did set me apart too, though visually, like even when people would see me, it was something that was very noticeable. So it did actually help me stand out a bit, which, you know, that was a good thing in my mind.
With a gymnastics career not in his future, Kevin studied for a degree and quickly learned that he needed to pivot.
I studied sociology and a minor in Spanish, and didn't really do anything with sociology after I graduated from college. But it certainly was a great overall like education to have to position you in business or really anything. Very research oriented. So
you are not the first person to have gone through college and get a degree and admit that they didn't really use a whole lot of it, but specifically in that field. But obviously, we know skills are transferable. How did you make the leap into a career in marketing after college?
That's a great question. There's so many parallels that you could make with sociology in terms of understanding behavior, societal behavior, or more organizational type behaviors in terms of how societies behave, that were very much aligned with marketing, where marketing is really about understanding your customer's behavior and using both. What I loved about it too was right brain, left brain. So there's a very data-driven analytical side to marketing, as well as more of the creative branding side, which to me just seemed, I think they fitted, it fit me naturally in terms of using both sides of my brain. But there were a lot more parallels than I would say there wasn't. In terms of application of my degree, it's just that that's where I felt like I was drawn to. I just was drawn to like understanding behavior in general, which also kind of speaks to coaching and what we do is understanding, right? Helping people understand themselves better, which I love.
I've seen this pitfall that many people-oriented professionals get trapped in. You like people, you know how to build relationships, you are a connector. But you have to learn how to leverage those skills strategically in order to get someone interested in who you are and what you do. Sure, you like people, but how do you take those skills and make them more valuable to someone? With a sociology degree in hand, Kevin found himself starting a career in marketing.
That's a great question. There's so many parallels that you could make with sociology in terms of understanding behavior, societal behavior, or more organizational type behaviors in terms of how societies behave that were very much aligned with marketing, where marketing is really about understanding your customer's behavior and using a lot, using both. What I loved about it too was right brain, left brain. So there's a very data-driven analytical side to marketing, as well as more of the creative branding side, which to me just seemed, I think they fitted, it fit me naturally in terms of using both sides of my brain. But there were a lot more parallels than I would say there wasn't in terms of application of my degree. It's just that that's where I felt like I was drawn to. I just was drawn to like understanding behavior in general, which also kind of speaks to coaching and what we do is understanding, right? Helping people understand themselves better, which I love.
Listen carefully to how Kevin outlines his career path. Follow along with him as he describes his career walk and listen to how he keeps layering on different experiences within the marketing profession.
So my first job was actually, I would say, more in customer service or client relationships. And I spent about 3 years in that role, started my career at GE. Shortly thereafter, I had found out about an internal development program at GE and knew that I was like, I want to pursue this. It was called their management development program. And so I talked to my boss, Funny, who at the time she had just graduated from that same program internally. And so that got me into this great leadership, I would say, training and program with GE. I spent the next 2 years studying that. And then once I came off the program, I ended up in with a group called Marketing Insights or Consumer Insights, which was all about understanding consumers' behaviors and using that information to drive the strategy and marketing strategy that we did. So that's where I started my career. And then it evolved from there after GE. I actually moved out to San Francisco and was in a client-facing role where I supported Gap Bank. And it was loyalty marketing, so really CRM loyalty marketing. And that's when I entered this whole new world of understanding retail. I was still a GE employee, but spent a lot of my time sitting with their brand marketing team. And it was through building those relationships that the director and senior director on the other side, on the Gap Bank side, really saw what I brought to the table, I think, in terms of my capabilities, my creativity, all the different skill sets that obviously I possess. And so I jumped ship and then jumped over to Gap Inc. and spent the next 2 or 3 years both in loyalty marketing and e-commerce.
There's a branch of marketing where Kevin excelled in called loyalty marketing. So I asked him to give us a high-level overview of it.
Really, loyalty marketing is about engaging your customer, I believe, in the most authentic way possible, engaging them with your brand in a way that speaks to their needs and understanding who they are, how they operate, and also how they shop, of course, but through building that relationship, also helping them understand what the benefits are of the product or service that you're selling. It's a lot more complex than that when you get into obviously the different channels and understanding and all that good stuff, but at a very high level, it's really about just speaking to and building those relationships with individuals so that they find a reason to come to your brand and buy from you.
Marketing is about telling your story. Active job seekers, whether it be for an internal or external position, must know how to tell their story. I asked Kevin to share some of the mistakes he sees people make when it comes to marketing themselves.
I'm going to speak from my own experience here, but I really think that, you know, trusting your own intuition and really being able to listen to yourself and understand yourself is so paramount. I think in a lot of mid-career, especially in mine, again, I'm speaking about my experience here. I think a lot of times I was in a space where I was probably looking sometimes more externally for answers from other people than really tapping in and understanding what my needs are. Like, who am I? What are my needs? And kind of standing confidently in that space, which also I think equates to you trusting your intuition. And so I believe that that is a huge area of opportunity for anyone, because it's easy sometimes to get caught up in someone else sort of directing your own, like directing your career with you almost not consciously knowing it, because everyone else is telling you you're amazing, you're this, like you should be doing this. And that's great. It's all great to get that support from the people, your boss or your fellow colleagues. But I think just really making sure that you're also checking in with yourself and understanding who you are in that relationship is key.
Yeah, I agree. Right. I mean,
I think it's where a lot of people find themselves getting derailed in a way. They may not be consciously aware that they're getting derailed, but what tends to happen is you then are in a career that 6, 7, 8 years later, you finally hit that wall, whatever it is. And you finally start to understand for yourself that you're like, wait a minute, what the hell am I doing? Like, why am I here and how the hell did I get here? And then it's usually that's when you start to unravel like what's going on. Like, okay, I need to understand myself better because I know I don't want to spend another 10 years doing this because there's a lot of things that may be sort of out of alignment or that you're not feeling energized about. You kind of feel like you're just maybe lost. Lost sometimes is really, I think, a word that I think a lot of mid-career individuals might experience, is a sense of not feeling like I have any direction.
And that is why you need a mid-career GPS to help you figure out whatever is next. As you build your mid-career GPS, you are going to do it around 4 key areas: preparation, positioning, promoting who you are and what you do, and how you show up. Telling your story from a place of value and service falls under the promotion portion of building your mid-career GPS. But what happens when your mid-career moment isn't all about your professional life, but it has more to do with your personal life?
I really did enjoy the work that I was doing, but what happened in my life in terms of the shift that I made and I chose to make, and it was one of the hardest damn decisions I've ever made in my career, was I loved Gap Inc., loved the people, loved the culture, loved my job, loved the woman that I was working for, and the team that was there. I basically fell in love. It would be different if I fell in love with someone who was not a diplomat, but because that person is a diplomat, my life was just completely uprooted with this idea that, my God, if you receive a new post or you receive you have to move to another city or location, what am I going to do? And that's exactly what happened, is that after 4 or 5 years together, a new post was given. And I love San Francisco. I was like, I love the city. I had a sense of support and community there. And it was just one hell of a hard decision for me to make in terms of stepping away from the career that I had already invested a lot of time building, and to trust my heart in a way, but also to really face a lot of the things that were in front of me, even about myself, like trusting another person, not having a support network where I was going, not having a job lined up, like feeling like I left a career that I loved. That was a very trying time.
Have you, or do you know someone who made a professional move because of love? And if you don't, let me tell you, this is exactly what happened to me. While I had been looking for my next advancement opportunity for a few years, I certainly hadn't planned on meeting someone and then dating them long distance for 2 years and ultimately moving because the job opportunities weren't available for them where I lived. We make decisions, and at times we make compromises. So what happens when you put your career on hold, even temporarily, because you move for love? Or you make a decision to be the one who stays home to be the primary caregiver to raise your children? In these situations, someone has to give. I asked Kevin what advice he has for you If you decide to move for someone or make a big career in life move because of certain circumstances.
I think one of the biggest things that I learned about myself, of course, after the fact, because I did not practice this, but I would say is to just allow yourself the space to experience the things that you will experience, but to also hopefully not judge yourself in the process. And when I say that, I mean not putting the pressure on yourself that like you need to find a job right away, or that, you know, you that because you don't have a job, maybe that means something to you. And you start to go to a place where you start judging yourself because you're like, well, I'm no longer so much of our worth. And there's so much research I know out there about this. So much of our worth is tied up in what we do, meaning our jobs and our careers. And so I think it's making sure that you understand that has nothing to do with who you are and your worth. It's just that you've made a decision, and to give yourself that space to experience and the things that you're going to, which with the change comes a lot. There's already a lot that's going to come with it, in terms of being in a new city, being in a new space, a living space, trying to establish a community, friends. It is a lot. So just have patience with yourself. Have patience and really listen to what you need, and really don't go after those things. Like, treat yourself to those things that you need, because it's so easy to get lost in the you know, God, what am I doing? What is this all about? Where's my worth? I no longer really am worth anything because I'm not working, or there's a lot there.
There can be so much pressure to try to feel like we have to get everything right in the move.
Absolutely.
And our spouse is going through a whole lot as well. So we don't want to make it difficult for them, but at the same time, you know, I ain't no scrub. And so
I think you're right. I think sometimes that's what it can feel like. I remember, you know, my first move, I had so much anger and resentment towards my husband, my spouse, in that, because there was blame, you know, like, here I am. But to be perfectly honest, I did make that choice and I made the decision for myself. And so I, again, realized that after the fact, but that was a natural thing to be feeling and experiencing, because I was the one that stepped away from everything that I had, that I had created, that I wanted. And it's not that I haven't gained a lot of other things too. So I just want to make that clear. But in this situation, I really think that it's, and I will say the other key thing, communication is key. Communicate what you're feeling and experiencing, whether you understand it fully or you don't understand exactly what's happening. Make sure that you are finding those channels, whether it's through your spouse, a friend, a close friend, family members. Keep the lines of communication open, because it really can be overwhelming.
With the change comes a lot. All of these factors can contribute to feeling overwhelmed and wondering what steps you want to take. The last thing you want to do is lose yourself. Kevin works closely with his clients and organizations to help them address causes of overwhelm and how to navigate through that. Here are a few tips of his to help you manage the overwhelm.
The number one thing that I think comes with this idea of overwhelm, and that I can say, is look, see what you can do to build compassion in for yourself during this time frame. And when I say compassion, that means it's the antithesis of all the judgment that you are probably normally going to go to and start to put on yourself. And it's that, to me, is such a powerful theme. And it you have to go a lot deeper into what that would mean, I guess, on a very individualistic level. But self-care and just having compassion for where you're at is going to be, I think, is going to help, you know, give you that longevity and sort of the drive and that you're going to need to get from where you are to where you know that you want to go. And it's just, it can be a killer. Judgment is the killer of so much. Our own self-judgment as well as judgment of others.
So let's go a little deeper. Right. So the person who is listening to this and they're like, oh, more self-compassion crap. Right. Like, and they're listening to this and they're automatically kind of dismissing it. And they're like, I don't know what that's supposed to be, because I'm dealing with so much judgment in my life anyway. Can you give me an example of what being a little more self-compassionate may be when somebody is overwhelmed to help paint the picture a little bit clearer?
I mean, it could start with just literally starting your day off or finding moments throughout your day to ask yourself the question, in what ways am I judging myself and the process that I'm currently experiencing? So that's just a very simplistic tool for you to just start building the awareness around where you may be experiencing judgment, which isn't necessarily the piece about compassion, but I think it starts there. And you know, it does. I agree with you, John, that, you know, you hear so much about like self-care and self-compassion, but what the hell does that really mean on a very true individualistic level? I think that's where it becomes important to listen to yourself. And a lot of people, to be perfectly candid, have no clue what that even means for themselves because they've never thought about it. And so I would say that it's just understanding and kind of experimenting, perhaps, and understanding what would it look like if I was less judgmental to myself and to what I'm going through today, and starting to like play with that and outline in real terms, what does that actually look like in your day? It could be one small thing.
Well, and to your point, Kevin, it's not only they haven't even thought about it, to your point, they haven't even given themselves permission.
That's right. I love that.
To really sit in that kind of space and say, hey, this is where I'm judging myself. This is what judgment is. If I deal enough of that with everybody else in my life, if I don't do it myself, what's that going to look like?
Exactly. And I think that would be the flip side of the coin for me with any person who would be like, oh, you know, this is that self-care, like, you know, positive toxicity shit, which I'm not about either. I'm about getting real. I think the piece here that for me is so critical is to help you would be asking yourself, you know, what is it really doing for you to be judgmental? Like, what are you seeing is the impact to you, your state of mind, the actions that you may be taking or not taking because you are judging yourself and you're judging, you know, putting all this pressure to like have things figured out and have it right. Like, that would be my question. So what is it really getting you? And then I think people sometimes kind of like, you know, set up a little bit higher because it's easy sometimes to think about it in those terms. Like, what is it costing you to be able to not be like, to experience less judgment? If you're really in that judgment space, there's an impact in your life and it's real and it's tangible and you can figure out what that is.
Well, one of the great things about that whole exercise that you're talking about is it just puts such a bright spotlight on how many times we actually judge ourselves.
I mean, if we had a quarter for every time we judged ourselves, I would be a billionaire. I don't know if a billionaire, but you know what I mean.
Yeah. Well, it's inflation, right? We don't go from a nickel to, we have to go from a nickel to a quarter now.
Maybe it's a dollar. You get the point. We are experts. We are human beings. We are experts at just tearing ourselves apart.
Yeah.
And there's another way. There is another way. That's what you need to know. There is another way.
What is the other way?
The other way is the antithesis of that, which is what we just talked about. It's about having compassion for yourself, understanding what is creating the judgment that you're experiencing, and then moving into a place where, in what ways is that either helping you or perhaps not helping you?
If you are in a management or leadership role, you know that the last few years have been difficult. Kevin's program, Leading Kinder, supports leaders by helping to change the paradigm of leadership by asking the question, what if the primary measure of effective leadership is how you and those around you feel?
Yeah, so I have a program. It's called Leading Kinder. And it is, I'd say, like my, I don't want to say my baby, but something, of course, that I am very, very, very passionate about. And the whole idea is just we are living in extraordinary times as leaders. We are leaders are having to deal with so much more in terms of the current landscape when it comes to our mental health, the levels of uncertainty that are out there. And all of these factors are affecting performance. Not only performance, but again, if you work in a corporate setting, they're affecting your, if you're measuring these types of things, employee engagement, morale, retention, all of these things are things that human resources are hopefully looking at as well as leaders. But what's happening is that I see is that there is such an opportunity for us to get kinder with ourselves first so that we can lead from a place where we're able to be more kinder and compassionate and how we're leading our teams. It's, you know, anyone in business, it can be small or big, right? It's just it's so performance driven. Everything is so, you know, the numbers, have we hit our numbers? Are we going to hit our numbers? And I think what we tend to lose sight of is that the lower, if you are experiencing such extreme levels of uncertainty or, you know, anxiety, stress, worry, those types of things, you're basically leaving potential and you're leaving performance on the table of how well you could be performing. And so that's why this is such a, I think, a big focus, and it should be, is that I also just feel like as a culture and a society, it's such an antidote to so many of the things that we've been seeing lately in our culture here. People, I think, have felt they just have lost the ability to be kind to themselves first, which allows you to then be kind to others, regardless of who they are, their background, who doesn't matter. It's just we have literally somehow crossed some line where we don't see the human and the human being in front of us. And that's what this whole leading kinder is about.
As we wrap up, I asked Kevin to share his advice to help you build your mid-career GPS. And I also asked him to share how you can connect with him and learn more about his coaching program and workshop.
Have patience with yourself as you are going through what could be a big transition. Understand who you are. Get some clarity for yourself around what makes you tick, right? What is it that you enjoy? What are the types of things that in your career have filled you up and that you really are, you know, you love doing, you just enjoy doing? And then more importantly, trust your intuition. Literally, if you can start trusting your intuition more, it's going to positively impact your decision making. And again, just be kind to yourself. Like literally show yourself the kindness that you deserve just because you are a human being, period. Show yourself the kindness as you're going through the process, because whatever's in front of you, it's hopefully going to take you to a better place than you are right now. And it's there. It's just waiting for you to step into it.
All right, Kevin, if anybody wants to get in touch with you, follow up, learn more about Leading Kinder, anything like that, how can people get in touch with you?
Go to my website first. It's twostepsforwardcoaching.com. It's kind of long. Or you can find me in Instagram, Facebook, and LinkedIn. And that's at Two Steps Forward Coaching. And I'd love to hear from you. I mean, you can also reach out to me, like direct message me through those channels if you'd like, or on my website. If you want to set up time and learn more about me, you can always go to the page and get on my calendar. Schedule some time with me on my calendar to learn more.
Kevin, I will make sure all of that is in the show notes. But thank you so much for spending some time with me today on the Mid-Career GPS podcast. It was great having you on today.
Thank you so much for having me. Have a great day.
Thank you, Kevin Hunting, for sharing your story and experiences with us to help us manage our overwhelm and find ways to navigate our mid-career journey. We know our professional journeys are dynamic. The decisions you make are just that. They are your decisions. You will turn, pivot, and navigate in any way you feel best. And sometimes you'll follow your brain, and other times you'll follow your heart. Part of your mid-career journey is based on fit. That fit, whether it be for your job, life, or both, needs to be right. And only you can assess that. And assessing fit is one of the many ways coaching can help. I like to think that coaching is about showing you your brain and what thoughts are going on in your head so you can make the best decision for your life and career. I want to offer you that you do not have to figure all of this out on your own. I'm here to help you. And if you're ready to do some work, you can either email me at john@johnnerl.com or direct message me on LinkedIn, and we can set up a complimentary call to see if coaching is right for you right now. So as we wrap up episode 99, I want you to remember this. We build our mid-career GPSs 1 mile or 1 step at a time, and how we show up matters. Make it a great rest of your day. You enjoyed today's show and don't want to miss an episode, subscribe on Apple Podcasts or wherever you usually listen. If you haven't already, I'd appreciate it if you would leave me a rating and review to let me know what you think to help others find this podcast and continue to bring you relevant and useful content to help you navigate what's next for your career. And if you're ready to create your mid-career GPS and get rid of the overwhelm so you can find the job you'll love or love the job you have, visit my website at johnnerl.com for more information about joining my private Facebook group and scheduling a free consult with me so we can start building your mid-career GPS together. Don't forget to connect with me on LinkedIn. Follow me on social at John Nerl Coaching. I'll see you next time.